Fanboy Smackdown! Today on Fanboy Smackdown, Tony and Tony talk about something I know nothing about. No, not women. Science fiction movies.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Tony.
And welcome to the Fanboy Smackdown podcast. Episode, which one are we at now, man?
I think we're at 23,
yeah.
Episode 23.
Say thank you. Give a huge thank you to Chris and Liz from Two Girls in a Podcast who filled in for us last week. They contacted us and said, we want Bond. And they did a great job.
I was thoroughly entertained. It was really good stuff. I am going to call M. Molly from now on, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good suggestion.
They did an excellent job. And I think it's fair for everybody to note that this is a first. The way we're recording this show is a first for us.
Yeah, we're hoping to. Well, it's convenient for one. We're recording it via phone line and from our own computers. And we also wanted to eliminate some of the sound problems that some people were having, including me, in the last episode.
So. Yeah, I think it was episode 20. It had some serious problems.
Yeah.
And what was weird was I listened through it once and it was fine, and I think it might have gotten corrupted when I added the image to it.
Oh.
So
okay.
We'll see. We'll have to. We're just gonna have to be a little more careful about it. But we do want to apologize for the problems we had with that one. Hopefully we won't have those anymore.
Yeah,
Hopefully this will take care of it.
I just blame the genie when I talk to people. I just was like, the genie was making Rice Krispies, you know.
Yeah, that genie, he's messed up.
He's crazy.
So. All right, so I think today's discussion, we're going to talk a little bit about actually a discussion that you and Stu and I believe Ed from Texas all had on our comments board.
True. Very true.
And you want to go ahead and set that up a little bit and tell everybody what's going on?
Basically, one way or another, a question was raised as to the nature of science fiction movies. And basically, there was a talk about how most of the movies, I made the observation basically that most of the movies I like, you know, for whatever it's worth, have no action or little action in them at all. I do like action science fiction, but most of the science fiction I like really has very little to do with action sequences.
Right.
And then it kind of went on from there. I suggested a few films that I thought were good, but were sparse on the action. And then we had a conversation about V for Vendetta, Blade Runner. We discussed AI, which was a matter of some controversy, I guess. And you even weighed in on that one, Tony.
Yeah, I threw in a few words on that one.
I about AI. I don't really know if I'm close to the movie or not. I don't own it or anything. But it's the only movie I've cried twice at, and I have only cried at three movies in my entire life.
Wow.
So I don't know what it was about that movie that made me just bawl.
Wow.
At the end of it twice. I don't know what it was, but
it is a touching story, and it's well acted throughout. It's hard for Spielberg to make a bad movie.
It is. He even tried really hard, and it was still good. It was Hook.
Yeah. My take on it has always been that it's Spielberg's Pinocchio.
Yeah.
Not that that's a bad thing. I mean, it's just that's what it is. I mean, to the point that, you know, they even use the blue fairy.
Right. The allusions to Pinocchio are obvious.
Yeah. They don't try to hide them at all.
No. No. He knows who he is. He finds solace in the Pinocchio tale.
Yep.
That if he can become a real boy, his mother will love him. And I don't know. It was the ending was poignant, but it was also heartbreaking at the same time.
Right.
I mean,
right.
I don't know. I'm a sucker. I was a sucker for that ending twice. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, some of the other movies that you guys talked about in the sequence, I'm kind of looking over the postings now, and The Matrix was mentioned, V for Vendetta, 28 Days Later, 2046. Now, 2046, now you mentioned this to me earlier. I am not familiar with this film. Could you give us a little rundown on what's going on with that one?
Yeah, it's actually debatable whether or not it is a science fiction film, because there's science fiction in it, but the movie is about a science fiction writer who lives in Hong Kong in the 1960s and 70s.
Okay.
And it's a sequel to a movie I've not seen, but you don't really need to see the first movie to know what's going on.
Well, that's good. It's good to know that people are making sequels like that.
Yeah, you know. It's kind of an elliptical sequel. It really only has to do with the first movie in that this character is the same, and what he's suffering through is his unrequited love for this woman. Both of their partners or husbands, or I mean, both, like his wife and her husband were having an affair in the first movie, and they both ended up staying in adjacent hotel rooms, or they shared the same hotel room. The hotel room was called 2046. Well, that was the number of the hotel room. This movie.
Oh, okay.
This movie is called 2046, and the guy's a writer, and he writes a science fiction novel that takes place in the future called 2046. That also is the year that the Chinese government is going to take away independent rule from the Republic of Hong Kong. So there are a lot of different, you know, parallels in there. There are a lot of science fiction sequences, but there's a question as to whether the science fiction sequences take place in his mind or if the character in the future invented his character to give him a reason to exist. Because he spends all of his time on this train in the future, and there's he basically has no real connection with anybody. And there are people say, well, no, that's not possible because the character was in the first movie. But this movie is very different from that first movie, from what I understand. And there's no reason. If you take this movie on its own, the movie begins and ends in the future. So what reason would there be to not assume that it's all taking place in the future and that the 60s and 70s are a reimagining of why he exists, which is very interesting.
That's cool. That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. It's mostly about, you know, love and affairs and this science fiction writer's life.
Right.
But
it's
got a memento-ish type of timeline. I mean, the chronology of it, it's not like Memento, where Memento has an actual structure. The chronology of it's actually quite random. And Zhang Ziyi is in it, and she's from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. She does a really good job in it.
Gotcha.
It's just a great movie. I just fell in love with the movie. I was trying to find it. I don't know where it's on sale, but you can definitely rent it, because it's only a couple of years old. So.
I'll have to see if that one's available on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Well, so. I think to do the conversation a whole lot more justice, we're going to have to maybe set down what constitutes science fiction. You know, and I know this is a discussion that probably goes back to the beginnings of when people started classifying stories as science fiction or fantasy.
Right.
But I think to do the discussion any justice, we're going to have to at least come to some common ground on what we're going to call these things. regardless of what everyone else does.
I think it would be good not only for the show, but for the ongoing debate. I'm sure this is not the first time we're going to discuss this topic.
Oh, I hope not. I mean, we've got a... Hopefully we've got a long history of talking about the kind of films that we're going to discuss today. I mean, I'd like to throw out, at least as far as what I look at as a definition of science fiction versus fantasy. Basically, where I see the drawing the line between the two is, at what point do you have to make a leap of faith in the fantastic, in something that doesn't even try to be explained by science?
I basically agree with that. I would say that fantasy, although fantasy, to be fair, sets up its own rules in advance.
Yeah, and I mean, and it's not to say that there's no structure and no rules to fantasy. The best fantasy does have very clear structure and very clear rules.
But it makes up its own rules, and those rules are not dependent upon hard science.
They're not dependent on hard science, and even science fiction makes you take some leaps in what is known and what is possible with the science of when it was written, and then extrapolating based on what we know now and making assumptions about the way things could be in
right.
the future.
Right.
I think some good examples of the difference between the two would be a movie like Star Wars versus a movie like 2001.
Right.
Now, granted, there are what could be considered some fantastic elements of 2001, but at the same time, I look at that as the fantastic element is simply an alien being or an alien race that is beyond our comprehension. It's not that it's fantasy, it's not that it's magical, it's just that it takes one of Arthur Clarke's, I believe people are referring to this as Clarke's Law, that once you advance science to a point, it starts to look like magic.
Yeah, I mean...
Beyond what we can understand.
Right.
When you get into the monoliths and things like that from 2001, where Star Wars, I mean, you pretty much have to put your faith in this mystical force. You know, it's...
Right.
They don't try to explain it. At least in the first movie, they don't try to explain it. It's just the force, and it is.
That's the governing logic of the film.
Exactly.
The relationship of people to that larger creation.
And they even present it as if it's mysticism and or religion.
Right.
They put it out that way in the film. Some other movies that would probably toe the line and you could throw out there, but not any of them. The Superman movies, I would say, are fantasy.
Oh yeah, I agree.
They go along the fantasy side. Now, it's contemporary fantasy. It's set in the modern world, but these are fantasy elements. They're not trying to explain how a rock is making a man sick and how just being in the Earth's, you know, in the sunlight of our star is giving this guy power, and then the powers that he has aren't really genetic or evolutionary. They're just kind of there. That goes along the lines of fantasy as well.
Yeah, I mean, I would pretty much have to agree with that, you know. Except, you know, like, if you take Batman, I think the first Batman was a fantasy. And Batman Begins, contrarily, I would classify as a sci-fi.
Yes, yes.
Some elements of Batman Begins are fantasy. There are certain things that you go, well, hey, that would never work. But really, that's just the fiction part of the science fiction, in my book.
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of, and this will be a slight spoiler, But we've already talked about Batman Begins before.
True.
The idea of the radiation or the microwave generator,
right?
That's blowing the manhole covers off, but the people aren't just popping like zits.
Right.
I mean, human beings should be exploding at that point if they're under the forces that are being described, and all that's really happening is the water in the sewer is boiling.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, it's bad science,
but it's that's
still,
what
I would still call it science fiction.
At some point, science fiction has to become what's quote bad or pseudo science.
Well, you have to make assumptions about it. I mean, it doesn't have to be bad, but you do have to make assumptions about it. I wouldn't say that any of the science in 2001 is bad.
Oh, okay.
I think that there were big assumptions made. And there are assumptions that were made not knowing what happened between 1970 and the year 2000. There was no way that Arthur Clarke could have predicted, you know, the space shuttle exploding in 85, which
right.
basically halted
the program.
You know, everything that NASA was doing.
They really have never recovered from that. I mean,
no, we really haven't. And it's only this week that we're talking about, you know, making a really big leap into science fact of a moon base.
Yeah.
I mean, NASA's talking about starting plans for a moon base in 2020, I think is just incredible.
I think it's incredible, especially because I don't think I think it violates an agreement everyone had about not basing on a lunar, like not having a lunar base, I thought. I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, I'm not sure on that one.
But unless it's a world kind of deal where everybody's hands in, which would make sense. I couldn't imagine NASA just putting a base up there.
Well, yeah, and from everything I've heard, they're talking that it would have to be an international effort. Just for the financial concerns, as much as anything.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking tens to hundreds of billions of dollars for an effort like this. I think
yeah.
it's going to have to be an international community effort, and it's not just going to be the U.S. government doing this on their own.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, yeah.
Also,
well, this is a mellow show. We're just kind of like, man.
Well, it's a little, you know, I can't really speak loudly tonight.
Yeah.
On top of that, we have the added feature of us not drinking together and raising
right,
hell.
Right, right,
so.
and not being able to react to each other in the same room. So it is kind of a different feel.
It's a little.
But I just kind of notice it. I just notice it now, so I wanted to point it out. Because I'm sure other people are going to notice it too when we listen.
They're like,
listen
"Yeah,
back,
are we?
So.
Is this a astronomy 101 seminar or what's going on here?" Also today, you know, while we're on the subject, I think anyone who's keen on space travel or research would really tar our hides for not mentioning it. They say they found water on Mars.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what they said today.
Yeah,
so.
that there's evidence within the last few years of water flowing on the surface of Mars.
Right.
Which is just, it's incredible.
It is pretty amazing.
That is an amazing discovery.
So pack your bags, because we're going to probably leap over there once the Earth blows up.
Excellent. Excellent. So. We'll go hang out with the Martians.
Right. We'll read Ray Bradbury to them.
Excellent. Bradbury and Wells.
So, back on to the subject of the movies of sci-fi and what
yeah.
constitutes sci-fi.
Let me go ahead and throw this out really quick. You've been on assignment, and you've been working on this very diligently for a while. You've been watching the series Firefly. And
yes,
you have
I have.
Not, and you have not yet seen the movie Serenity. We are not planning on discussing that as this show, as part of this show. It has actually been included In the Archon episode that I posted, that was actually a discussion of Serenity and Firefly.
Right, but I was told not to listen to it, right?
Yeah,
you, because
you're not supposed to listen to that.
I've actually not heard that episode, which is interesting.
Yeah, because we don't want you to get spoiled on some of the stuff that you have yet to see in the movie.
Right.
And so we are going to save the discussion of Firefly and Serenity for a later date. So just in case anybody is thinking we're just neglecting speaking of that, we're not. There is a method to the madness of not speaking of it. I just wanted to point that out before we got too deep into this particular discussion.
Basically, Tony and I come from different places, and our movie experiences and are very different. It's really been great because we exchange a lot of movies.
Oh yeah.
And we expand the knowledge of what we've seen. Mm-hmm. Very much, and it's very cool to be, oh, you're interested in sci-fi? Well, so am I. Well, I've got this series called Firefly that you've never heard of, and you've got a Japanese movie called 2046 that you've never heard of, and so it's pretty cool. I like
the series. It's great. It's great because, in looking at some of the stuff that Stu has brought up, I mean, he approaches this. I mean, we live in the same country, in the same, in the same metropolitan area. He's a third of the way around the world, so he's got access to things that a few of the things that he's mentioned I've never even heard of.
Right.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So I'm already looking up some more movies to throw in the Netflix queue.
Yeah, I mean, now with Netflix and all this technology we got going on now, we're podcasting over cell phones,
Yeah.
It becomes pretty easy to talk about science fiction and live in a world that was science fiction only like 20 years ago if you want to get really existential about it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what we're doing. It's pretty cool. The series Firefly, I won't mention much, but just to say that in terms of science fiction, even though I would argue that it's one of those where you can't really categorize it as either science fiction or fantasy, although I would say nothing particularly fantastical happens.
There are arguably elements of what River is capable of,
right,
that toe the line with fantasy,
right,
but some of what you see in the series and some of what you see in the movie, they try to put it more firmly in the camp of it being science fiction.
I would have to say now, upon you saying the series and some things you see, there is an episode where it really takes on a fantastical bent regarding the men in suits. And I won't say any more than that.
Ah, yeah.
And probably the part of the series I was most interested in, and then found nothing else in the first season about it, which I was like, oh, so I hope it's in the movie.
And keep in mind, it was only half a season.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So.
Yeah, but we can, I mean, we'll save the depth for all of that discussion for the time when you've seen Serenity, and we can get all kinds of fun and spoilery with that one.
Right.
All right, now let's jump more into the science fiction. You've mentioned AI.
Yeah.
What are a couple of others that come to your mind when you think of science fiction movies?
I like THX. I like Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Mentioned 2046. I'm trying to think of the ones I really like. It's just the select few that I just really stand by.
Right.
I think, Back to the Futures. I mean, they're comedies, but they're fantastic.
They are. They play around with the ideas sufficiently enough that, It's more comedy than science,
right?
And I think in my mind they treat it more like fantasy than science fiction.
They do, although I think what really made the series entertaining was how careful they were with the science, or the not really the science, but the philosophy of traveling through time.
Yes. Yes.
That, okay, how they travel through time is kind of junk science. Nobody really cares. It's a fucking capacitor. But the idea of them doing it and the repercussions of it are completely logical. And the idea of traveling through time but not space, which was borrowed from H.G. Wells.
Right.
Worked out very well for them. They were able to do a lot of interesting things that really had more to do with science fiction in terms of cause and effect. And two is the most fascinating one to me because it explores that the most.
Right.
Even though the science of actually traveling through it with the machine that they had and what the future looks like was all pretty much, you know, a joke.
Right.
But I still like it. I still think they hold up as good science fiction movies. I also like Ghostbusters.
The one thing that I really liked about Back to the Future, especially the first one, was the level of detail they took in every part of the story and keeping track of where everything was in the future, in present day, in 1985, when Marty left to go back, and then when he came back, it was really fascinating, some of the little details. When he left to go back the first time, he was leaving from Twin Pines Mall.
Right, and it's Lone Pine Mall when he comes back, yeah.
Well, because when he goes back to the past,
he
plows right through one of the baby pine trees.
Yeah.
It's great. I mean, he just takes out one of the pine trees. So when he comes back to the future, it's the Lone Pine Mall or the Lone Pines Mall or something like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of little things that happen along those lines.
Yeah, those are the things that made those movies really special. I mean,
there was a level of detail. Yeah, I mean the science was it was junk science. It was fantasy science.
It was.
It was okay. This is just a method to get to the story we want to tell.
Right.
And you know, you're gonna have to suspend your disbelief. Which I think, and I think one of the things that movies like this, if they can establish early on that you need to suspend your disbelief, turn off your left brain, turn off the science part of your brain, and just enjoy the ride, if you can do that early enough, you're fine with it.
Exactly.
And I think the scene for me for Back to the Future that does that is the very beginning when he plugs his guitar into the huge speaker, hits the cord, and gets blasted across the room.
Right.
Which isn't going to happen.
Right.
But at the point when you see that, you're like, okay.
It's a very slight heightening of the reality that you're going to be in.
Exactly.
And
you know, turn off the logic. Yeah, turn off the logic. You're not supposed to believe that this could really happen. Have fun with it.
Right.
You know, we're not taking it really seriously. We realize we're not taking it seriously. Please don't take it seriously and just enjoy the ride.
Right.
And that, I mean, that film succeeds with that.
Yeah, I mean...
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it does a good job of changing your sense of reality before it invests you into the, quote, science. So in a way, I mean, it really does both. It kind of makes up its own rules.
Yes.
But then at the same time, once it gets into the science of time travel in terms of the philosophy of traveling through time, it's pretty loyal to
its rules.
Right. To the rules of real time. Yeah.
Well, but to the rules that it makes. I mean, the one problem you have with it if you start thinking it through was the idea that okay, I changed time, and I have a photograph, and the photograph is slowly changing.
Right. Yeah, you know, it doesn't.
Why the photograph would slowly change instead of instantaneously change, that was something, you know, that I kind of questioned.
Yeah.
But if I'm questioning that at the point that I'm at in that movie, then why am I even watching it?
Exactly. You know, yeah.
To that point. I mean, I watched a dude get blasted back through a wall from a speaker earlier in it. You know? How much thought can I really put into the logic of time travel at that point?
But and once you saw Huey Lewis pick up the megaphone and say, "I'm afraid you're just too darn loud," you had to know it was a fantasy.
Exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I think that was that's a good example. I mean, and for my money, it's more fantasy, but it establishes its rules very, very clearly, and it sticks to its rules.
I think you're right. It is a fantasy, but I'm so blown away by how well it does the story of time travel.
Yeah.
That I almost feel like it justifies better than any other time travel movie I can think of, much of which is based on harder science fiction.
Right.
The reason to tell a time travel story. Like, it's more loyal to me to original time travel fiction than most of the stuff about time travel that exists otherwise. And in that way, it's kind of existing on the rules of previous science fiction.
Right.
Even though it in and of itself is a fantasy.
Yes. Well, you've got Back to the Future. In talking just of time travel movies, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. You've got the Terminator series.
Right.
Which, without time travel, that there is no story there. Time Cop. Jean-Claude Van Damme,
yeah,
as a time cop,
right?
Which, I mean, as cheesy as the movie is, they actually did try to establish some rules for time travel, and establish that there was an authorized body, a government body that was pegged with monitoring the time streams and keeping the time streams from becoming corrupted, which is it's a noble concept in a movie like that, to go that far, and then you've got Jean-Claude Van Damme as your time cop. So,
you've got a really good one that kind of turns in on itself, called 12 Monkeys.
Yeah, yeah.
Which essentially is a story about predestination.
Right.
I mean, so the real question is, you know, does anything happen in that movie? Because you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And the science of it, I can't remember what the science of the time travel is. But
yeah, I can't remember in that one either. It's been a while since I've seen it.
Basically, not to give it away for anyone who hasn't seen it, it is a good movie. It's definitely worth seeing, especially
for
time travel. I would say it's even more fantasy than Back to the Future. It's really far out.
Right.
And I don't know if... I mean, it does make a lot of sense. The science of its time travel is interesting. It kind of does a loop.
Yeah.
Kind of fulfills its own prophecy sort of thing.
Yep.
That's another one.
I would be remiss in not mentioning Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Of course.
of course.
And The Bogus Journey.
The Bogus Journey. The Bogus Journey was more about a journey to hell. But Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure did actually deal with time travel. They established some rules for time travel. And they did stick by their rules.
They did.
I mean, it was a fantasy. It's clearly a fantasy. It's not science fiction, but they stuck by their rules, and they actually did some clever things with jumping through time, both backwards and forwards, throughout the course of a couple of days, to make things that seem nonsensical in earlier in the movie to have them actually pay off at the end.
Yeah.
You know.
And any science fiction movie with George Carlin's okay in my book. I mean.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or fantasy movie rather.
So. Yeah, and you know, we'll even bother mentioning that one because Keanu's in it, but
right.
He was in the one truly great role for him in that movie.
Now, I saw a movie about time travel with him in it just this past week. But it's a fantasy. And this is the perfect date movie. This is
the Lake House?
Yes. This is the perfect date movie. If you want to see a movie that you and your girlfriend will enjoy, you should see The Lake House.
I've heard some varying opinions on this film.
Well, I don't know if it's anything particularly extraordinary, but, I mean, it's exactly what you're paying for. It's a movie about Sandra Bullock and Keanu Reeves falling in love, except there's not a bomb attached to a bus going at 60 miles an hour. You know? I mean, other than that, it's the same movie. But basically, the reason it's such an outstanding date movie is, with the exception of, you know, the outstanding blockbuster that everyone wants to go see at a theater, a good date movie to rent is one that has enough of a love story, you know, for the lady and all of that, the anticipation, and are they going to fall in love or not, and all of that. And I'm not going to say what happens at the end, because I don't want to give that away.
Right.
It's a story about them trying to meet up. And then if you're a guy, I mean, you're at the very least compelled, if you don't believe, or if you can't, I mean, I don't mind romantic movies, but if you can't stand romantic movies, you're at least compelled by trying to figure out why they are communicating 2 years apart via letters, and what's going to happen next, just from a practical nature, since they occupy the same house, and only 2 years have gone by. So, from a purely logical standpoint, you're interested. And I just thought that was a really cool concept. It was kind of the ultimate movie to rent, you know, if you want to hang out with your girlfriend, because it kind of has something for both people, and that was pretty good.
All right.
So.
Well, I'm trying to think of some other time travel movies specifically. We of course have The Time Machine, which has been made and remade and unmade and shouldn't have been made. You know,
there is an old version which apparently is the definitive version.
Yes.
I've never seen the new one either. I just heard the new one was atrocious.
Yes, it's one of those things that somebody decided that it was a period piece, and there's a version of the movie that I saw, and I want to say that I saw it in probably the mid-80s, and it actually had H.G. Wells as one of the characters of the film, and he is the one who fashioned the time machine, and... Jack the Ripper goes through time using his time machine, and H.G. Wells is using a time machine to go after him.
I'd have to say that's a very loose translation of the original
novel.
Oh,
my. loose is a very generous word at that point. Considering
it's called
it has
The Time
nothing.
Machine, or is it called H.G. Wells' Time Machine?
I think it's called H.G. Wells' Time Machine.
Okay. Well, that's not necessarily the time machine, then.
No, it is not the time machine. I mean, the time machine, you should have, you know, traveling to prehistory. You should have some of the great sequences at the end with the Eloy and the Morlocks. In the end, the time machine, the book, The Time Machine, is a great study of society.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the notion I've gotten from all accounts, is it's a metaphor for, I mean, if you want to extrapolate more to that time, maybe the proletariat and the bosses, or maybe the...
It was the social classes and the working classes.
Right, yeah.
It's, I mean, it's very obvious. You have the Eloi who do nothing, who live off of what is given to them freely, who do whatever they want whenever they want, and they just have to be careful of those Morlocks. Then you have the Morlocks who struggle. They live underground. They do everything they can to get by, and are looked at as barbarians by the Eloi.
Right.
So, and then the, you know, of course, the Morlocks look at the Eloi as, you know, flighty, worthless waste of time.
Right.
Because they don't know what working for their living is.
Exactly.
It was not very veiled in what it was
right.
going
it was
for.
Pretty. It was pretty straight up, you know.
Yeah.
So, and that was before this president. Man, just think if they made it now. how violent it would be. How mad the Morlocks would be.
Wow.
Really mad, I guess. I don't know.
Oh, my. But, yeah, it's... And that's one of the things that a lot of times science fiction does. It extrapolates where we're at and where the story was written, the time period the story was written in, and it shines a light on that society, and they try to make a social statement by, you know, extrapolating things out and expanding them and pushing the boundaries of what they have there.
It does, as V. In V for Vendetta says,
yeah.
uses lies to tell the truth, which is what he says about fiction.
Yeah.
I'd say with science fiction, it's probably more true about science fiction than almost any other type of fiction. Because, for example, THX, Blade Runner.
Yes.
Some of the great science fictions. The inherent in the science of the film is the injustice that's being done in the society. I mean, it's kind of bred into the science of how the society works. And the reason it becomes science fiction is because it's essentially an extrapolation of what we might become.
Right. Right.
And it's a futurist type of vision.
Exactly.
So in that way, I think science fiction does a better job almost than any other type of fiction at talking about, you know, who we are, because it's the only type of fiction that really asks the question who we might be, you know, which is where we are going.
Yes.
It doesn't really ask, you know, well, where have we been, you know. Historical movies do that, and I love those, but you can't really take more from history than what's already there. So that's what I like about science fiction.
Sure, sure. And I think one of the things to say about science fiction is that the fans of science fiction, and this is really true across the board from books to movies to television, is they, in general, it's not good to make generalities, but in general, they like digging into things. They like picking things apart. They like, you know, hyper-analyzing the aspects of what they're looking at. And by the nature of that, you generally have smarter storytelling within science fiction than in a lot of other genres, just because you have to do that for your audience.
And you can't substitute all the hard work you've done on the hard science for real storytelling. You can't ever lose any of the real storytelling.
No, and if you do, I mean, it just falls apart.
Right.
You have atrocious messes.
At the same time, you have to do all of the, you know, what you're saying, you know, the exposition, the validation of the
yes.
science element of the fiction. At the same time, you also have to tell a good story.
Right, right.
So it's doubly challenging, I would say.
And, you know, and one of the original ideas of this topic was, and I know where the conversation you guys had online was, the amount of action that goes into a science fiction movie. Some people want a good action-filled science fiction movie. My favorite science fiction movies are very quiet.
Right.
Me too. You know, they have special effects sequences by the nature of being a science fiction film, but they tend to be very quiet movies. They're not very action-filled. A couple of my favorites are Gattaca.
I've never seen that.
Oh, great film. Gattaca, Solaris, and I actually...
Wait, which Solaris?
I have seen the Russian version, which is... I mean, that takes some serious intestinal fortitude to sit through. I believe it's a four-hour-long film.
Sweet.
And it's all in Russian. It's subtitled. You can't... There is no dubbed version of it that I'm aware of. And I have seen it. I've seen that version, and I have seen the Clooney Soderbergh version, which is a good film.
It's good, but I had a lot of questions. I didn't fully understand. I guess I just didn't fully understand the picture.
Well, and you know, it's meant to be that way. You're not supposed to understand everything coming out of it. Even seeing the Russian version, what's funny is I think I might have understood the Russian version. And then, you know, then I saw the Clooney version and understood it. The thing with that is that when you're stuck there for 4 hours watching this film, you're thinking of nothing for 4 hours about what the hell is going on.
Right.
So you're putting forth a lot more mental energy into figuring out what's going on and understanding the symbolism and what they're trying to accomplish. And I think... just the amount of time you're able to spend with the film, watching the longer version, you get it. Because, to my estimation, there wasn't a whole lot that was lost in the Clooney Soderbergh version from the original, even though it was a much shorter film.
What did you see as the point of that film?
You know, I don't want to talk about it now. I want to let people have a chance to see it.
Okay.
Because I think that's one of those movies that, depending on how you understand the relationships in the movie, will formulate what you get out of the movie. I saw that movie as a very personal experience. There was a lot there that just felt very personal.
It was one of those movies where I liked it, but I had trouble trying to fill the gaps. You know, I it was another one of those where I was like, oh, if there was just another half hour where I could figure more out.
Well, watch the Russian version then, because there's like another hour and a half to it.
I think I'll have to do that now.
Yeah, so that, and I mentioned it earlier, is 2001 and 2010. I really enjoy those films.
I didn't know that 2010 was a movie. What's that one about?
Yes, it's 9 years later. It's set in the same universe. Roy Scheider's in this one.
Oh, okay.
Both of them are Arthur C. Clarke novels. The story of it's. The second one, I believe, the second one was actually a novel first, whereas the first one, 2001, started off as a short story called The Sentinel that, I'm blanking on his name now. I'm just dying here. Anyway, he made it into the film. And
Stanley Kubrick?
Kubrick, yeah. Okay. Kubrick made the film. While Kubrick was making the film, and Clark was working with Kubrick in making the film, Clark was writing the novelization of the movie based on his short story.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was really weird how they were all tied together. There's actually been four books in the cycle. 2061 and 3001 to follow it up, But the movies, there's only been 2001 and 2010. And it's, I mean, it's a literal sequel. And it just,
cool.
Yeah, it tells what has happened now that there's a second sun in our solar, you know, second basically star-like object in our solar system. To spoil the end of the first movie.
Oh, no, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of hard to spoil a movie that's, what, 35 years old?
Yeah.
Yeah, 35. Actually, I think now it is about 37 years old. I think that came out in 69.
Hey, Luke is Darth Vader's son.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I was gonna say something about Serenity, but I probably shouldn't.
Oh, okay. That movie's only been on for 2 years. You better not say nothing.
So yeah, I mean, those are some of my favorites as far as the harder science fiction movies. Again, they're just
cool.
It's slower. They're slower pacing to them, but they're just more thoughtful movies too.
Yeah, I mean, and those are the ones I prefer as well. I mean, I like the slower,
yeah,
more kind of the nature of reality or the unexplained movies, as opposed to using this. And by saying this, I probably don't give those movies enough credit inherently, but it's
right.
Just the way I see. But using the science fiction as an action vehicle, as opposed to exploring the question science fiction, you know, automatically creates just by virtue of it existing, you know, I think, you know, the prior is more interesting. But I mean, you know, I mean, I love a good action movie too. I love
Batman
Begins. So you know,
absolutely,
whatever that's worth.
Well, I think we're definitely going to be exploring this topic some more because we barely scratched the surface with this discussion.
We've been talking for an hour. That's
yeah, I mean, we're at almost an hour.
The fastest hour we've ever talked, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, and it seems like we really haven't gotten anywhere with the conversation.
Right.
I know we're going to talk about this a whole lot more, and I think maybe you know we've talked about the time travel aspect. Somewhat here, and maybe, you know, as far as if people want to leave some feedback on the discussion, I say let's focus on the time travel aspect now, and we'll break out into another aspect of it in another show.
We also have a kind of a short list or an A list of our favorites, kind of informally.
Yeah.
If you guys like any of those movies, or if you wanted to bring up some that are your favorites.
Or question our choice in favorites.
Exactly. Yeah, you could be like, 2046.
That what are you blows. Talking about? Yeah.
Or THX 1138. It's just a movie about bald people.
Yeah.
You know? So, I couldn't actually disagree with that argument. I mean,
no, it
that's
is for bald people.
So.
Which is brilliant. I actually love the concept.
Yeah. So.
It works. I'm headed that way myself.
It's a movie about your future.
My future, yes, exactly. well, I wanted to you know, I think we've wrapped this discussion up pretty much. Before we head out, I wanted to welcome everyone who's joined us with the Hollywood Stock Exchange from episode 21. If you're not sure what I'm talking about, go check out episode 21. It's a shorter episode that I did by myself and kind of introduced the Hollywood Stock Exchange. It's a fun game that a group of us are now playing. Myself, you're playing it. Julie is playing, as well as a number of our listeners. We've got, let me just take a quick rundown here. We've got Stu is playing. Eliz from Two Girls in a Podcast. She's joined us. Let's see. John Bowes is playing. And did I mention Stu already? Yeah, I think I did. And Jeremy Osborne has joined us. Jeremy actually sent us an email, which let me go ahead and jump on over here and read that now. And he says, damn you guys. This is Jeremy from West Virginia, and I want to thank you so much for giving me something else to obsess about at work. I'm sure my boss will thank you as well. HSX is very addictive, and he gives his username. I've managed to get a friend from work hooked too. Unfortunately, he's actually gone to school to study some accounting and such, and so got way too far into the trends and the whole numbers of the exchange, because that's the one thing I didn't mention. There is a ton of history out there for each of the stocks, and you can do you can go out and look at the trends for each stock. Go out and look at some of the stocks that have been out there for a couple of years. For example, go check out like Shrek 3, which they knew for a while they were going to make that one. And go look at some of the history they have out there on that stock, and you can see how the stock has risen and fallen based on rumors and who was going to be in it and stories and such. So that's kind of interesting. But
just a disclaimer, we are not personally responsible for the loss of any job or social life on behalf of the HSX. you can email all your complaints to HSX.com.
Yes, we're merely the conduit. They are the dealer.
Right.
Let's see. He goes on.
Don't shoot the messenger.
Yeah. let's see. He got way too far into the trends, and he forgot to take into account what would and wouldn't make money at the box office. So this guy, I guess, was just looking at the trends and really wasn't paying attention to the box office. And he said, lucky for him, the reset button was there. Still, it's pretty sad when you've used your reset after under a week.
that's no big deal.
Yeah, he invested heavy into a derivative or two that didn't pan out over the first weekend and felt there was no way for him to turn it around. He said that he stuck with things that he wanted to see at the box office, comic book movies and sci-fi. And he says he doesn't know about us, but he refuses to pay more than $60 or $70 a share for any actor or actress. So it seems to me that when their stock is that high, it's time that they have leeway to do, quote-unquote, that project that they've always wanted to do that really makes any money, which I gotta say is pretty accurate.
It's mostly true, yeah.
Ben Affleck has joked that he makes one movie that makes money and then one movie that he wants to make.
Right.
And then makes a movie for money and then makes a movie that he wants to make. That's why every other movie is a Kevin Smith movie, because he wants to make those. He doesn't make any money at them.
Right. Speaking of which, I wanted to mention that we forgot to bring up Kevin Smith's science fiction, Chasing Amy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And actually, you know, he's rumored to be working on a science fiction movie as well as a horror movie.
Yeah.
Let's see. Anyway, love the show as always. You guys have now become my only movie podcast since Geek Drum has called it quits. Thanks again for the heads of About HSX. I always wanted to learn how the stock market works, and this is a fun way to do it. Look forward to each and every show. Thanks for all you do. Well, thank you, Jeremy. That was awesome.
We appreciate the compliment.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I don't know who Geek Drum was. No offense to those guys.
Yeah,
but,
I honestly I'd not heard of them.
All of their fans should come listen to our podcast.
Exactly. And, Jeremy, if you have an insight on who their fans were, point them this way. We have openings for listeners. We have plenty of openings for listeners.
We have, you know, the most unintelligent conversations about drinking, and then at the same time we'll turn around and we'll spin you this high-minded philosophical garbage that you have to sift through just to hear about V for Vendetta. So
exactly,
you know, it can go any way with us.
That's right. That's right. One other person chimed in on the HSX conversation. I want to mention Phil Rossi. And Phil is one of my competitors over at Pickle Tales. If you get a chance, check out Filling the Page. It's Phil's podcast. I've taken a listen to a couple of episodes of his show. It's kind of a free form. He's a writer. He's a musician. And he puts on a good podcast. So check him out. He's like I said, he's one of my competitors in the Pickle Tales competition, and he's a cool guy, and he chimed in on our side as well.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let's see. As far as HSX is going, see, Eliz from Two Girls in a Podcast, she cheats, apparently, because she's in first place. But
how did she cheat?
She cheated because she used an account that she's been using for a couple of years.
Oh, okay.
So she's
well,
got like
cheating.
She's got like 24 million.
Wow.
And the rest of us start with two.
Well, I have some stocks she can lose money in because I'm doing that right now. So
yeah,
we can
I know.
Even the table really quickly.
Let's see. So next on the queue is the core account for Fanboy SmackDown in number two, and that account is sitting out there. It's I think these rankings are as of yesterday, and we're recording this on Thursday, December the 7th. So this would have been as of December the 6th. It had just over 2.7 million. John Bowes had 2.4 million. Julie has just under 2.3. Jeremy is just a little bit behind her. Stu's clocking in at just a little bit over 2 million. And you, sir, are pulling at the rear.
That's right. Rounding out the bottom.
1.9. You've lost some money.
I just want to say I'm taking big risks on artistic projects. So,
you know,
that I feel will pan out.
It does. You know, it's
because
this is a stock market model, and you can day trade, or you can hold long. And
feel like I'm more important than by investing in movies that don't make any money. That's one of the it's one of the things about
just
art.
Just showing
films,
your
you know.
Elitism.
Yes, I'm very
I invest
smart
in
for
movies
investing
that
in
no
movies.
No one has ever heard of, and probably no one ever will hear about.
They don't make money, I lose all my money, and that's why I am a genius, yes.
Yes. All right. Well, I think this about wraps this show up. I think we can go ahead and give folks a preview that probably, because we don't know our schedule for the next couple of weeks exactly, but I know probably within the next 2 weeks we're going to have a little holiday show.
True.
And I have a feeling that we're going to be going to see a certain boxing movie that's coming up.
Right. You don't know which one it could be. There are a lot of boxing movies out in a few weeks, you know. They're
yeah.
flooding the market. But
yeah.
if you've been paying close attention, you might be able to figure out which one we're going to see.
And if you want a hint, it's the one that is the sixth part in a series of
yes.
films.
Yes. Yes, as opposed to Raging Bull 5,
yeah,
which is just a cheap knockoff starring two members of The Sopranos. It's really bad. Yeah, we're gonna go see a certain movie about an Italian stallion.
Yep.
And it also coincides with a re-release of the original in the same kind of deluxe packaging that accompanied Raging Bull. I'm sure all kinds of special features and how it was made and all that. So maybe
yes.
I'm probably going to show up at the rental store and pick that up and maybe we can talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, I picked up a special edition and no surprises here. I'll go ahead and give it away. I picked up a special edition of. I picked up a special edition of this film a couple of years ago. And, fine, you whiner.
Nobody knows, I swear.
Yes, nobody has a clue what we're speaking about.
They all think it's Raging Bull 5. I'm
it is.
I'm telling you.
It's not?
Oh, I'm sorry, I gave that away.
I picked up the special edition a couple of years ago. They were packaging them up, and it's, I mean, if it's anything like that one, it's a good grouping, and they've got some good stuff in there. And I'm definitely going to be watching it again before we go see the new film and before we podcast about it.
For show.
Yep. All right.
For show.
Well, you guys know how all the various ways to get a hold of us. We've got our email address, fanboysmackdown@gmail.com.
True.
We've got the voicemail, 206-339-FBSD, 206-339-3273. And we haven't had any voicemail in a while. So
though,
I have been getting some faxes on this number, because it also doubles as a fax number. And apparently we've got some good mortgage rates available to us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Exactly. You can chime in on some of the great discussion we've got going on the comment lines for the individual episodes. Come to the website, fanboysmackdown.com. You can reach us.
They got a good mortgage rates thread on there right now, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, man, they're looking pretty good. It sounds like a good time to to check out those rates.
If you want to diversify your holdings in HSX and go into fictional real estate, then
that's a good idea.
Then now is the good time. Now is the time to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. The rates.
All right.
The rates are going
I've
down.
I killed this joke. Now it's my fault. I'm sorry. anyway.
Yeah, we've got. We've still got the forums over at PowerUpGamers.com. I am appearing over at Pickle Tales, which you can find Pickle Tales at Podcast Pickle, and if you go to podcastpickle.com/PickleTales, all the information about the contest is there. You go to the forums on Podcast Pickle and look for the threads regarding the Pickle Tales competition. I'm going to be submitting my round 3 story tomorrow night, and that show will come out, I believe they said, on Tuesday of next week. So you have time to get in, check it out, listen to some really great stories. I think right now, through both the competition and the audition rounds, there's something in the range of like over 30 short stories available.
Wow.
Yeah, and you know, not all of them are in the competition, but it's 30 great short stories, and it's well worth your time to go out and take a listen to them. Some really good stuff.
They're written to entertain, so.
Yeah, yeah.
So check them out.
Let's see. The other thing, and I, you know what? I'm going to post the number on the show notes, because I'm blanking on the number right now. There is a new service that is being offered, and it's called, I believe it's called Podlines. And what it does is it gives you the opportunity to listen to podcasts via your cell phone.
And yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's not like streaming through the internet or anything like this. And actually, it's not just your cell phone. If you live in the San Francisco area, it's a local number. But for anybody else, they probably want to use their cell phone. What you do is you dial this number, and you can listen to the podcast. It's the most recent podcast only for whatever podcast you're listening to, and there's a number of podcasts registered. But I'll go ahead and include the number on the show notes, because I don't have that number in front of me right now. I apologize about that. But it's really cool. You dial this number, and you can just listen to the podcast on your phone.
Man, all over the world, New York Stock Exchange, job sites, people will be taking their lunch break, opening up their phones, and listening to our podcast.
Absolutely.
And it's so exciting.
It's cool. It's some really cool stuff.
I had to laugh at the end, because I almost like we sounded serious. About the, we're going to have thousands of listeners just pouring
chomping
through.
Chomping at the bit, waiting for the next show.
I would just like to say, as a little mushy moment here. Today is the anniversary of Pearl Harbor.
Yes, it is.
So I just wanted to mention that so everybody remembers it. And that's all pretty much I have to say in closing.
Excellent. All right. Well, we're coming to a very busy season for everybody. In at least in our part of the country, the weather has been rough, and there's, you know, it's been some treacherous weather.
Yeah.
Everybody stay safe and enjoy the whatever time you might have with your friends and family during the season. I'm sure we'll mention it more when we have our holiday show, but wanted to give that shout out right now before people get, you know, too busy and taking time off of work and such and slip away from listening to podcasts on a regular basis, which I know it's going to happen. It's, you know, and that's cool. We'll still be here. We'll still be cranking out shows, and we'll have all kinds of stuff for you to listen to in the new year when you come back.
Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Yep, have a good one. And, hey, go check out the movies. There's a lot of good ones coming out, and Oscar season is right around the corner.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to talk about that very soon.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, peace, man.
Peace.
See ya.
Boys.com. Do 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 do.